Hey, welcome to the CMO Whisper Show. I'm your host, Steve Olensky. Part marketing practitioner, part ad agency veteran, part journalist. I was a writer for Forbes for 10 years. I've had so many insightful conversations over the years with business leaders, to athletes, to celebrities, to, of course, CMOs. The only difference now is instead of sharing those insights through written form, I'm doing it this way. My guest this week has been everywhere, man, or seemingly. From Converse to Starbucks to Procter & Gamble to Coca-Cola to his current role as Chief Brand Officer at Topgolf. I met Jeff Cottrell many moons ago during my days at Forbes. What an amazing conversation we had. We touched on so many different topics. You're really going to enjoy it. And here it is. My friend, it's long overdue. How the hell are you? And welcome to the show.
Man, it is good to see you. It's good to talk to you. That's quite an introduction, man. I don't know how I have time to do any of that.
Exactly. Like, I think that's all the time we have. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. No, man, I'm good. It has been a long time since we've talked live, but it's good to see you.
I look back on when we met, and speaking of Grammys, it was when I was at Forbes and you were at Converse. And I did a piece on the Grammys, and Converse was a partner with the Grammy Foundation, if you recall.
That's right. We were. I was on the board of the Grammy Foundation for 10 years as part of that relationship between Converse and the Grammy Foundation. So it was fun.
By the way, have you ever been to the show?
Yeah. Seven Grammys? Or eight times. Yeah.
I got to go twice when I was at Forbes. It's incredible. And the celebrities that you meet, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I'd be going, what am I doing here?
Exactly. And then I'd be going, who is that? Why don't I know anyone? Why am I so out of touch?
I'm old.
For sure.
So there's a whole slew of things I want to get into.
Cool.
But I really want to start kind of at a high level at marketing principles, right? Of what we're going to call great brands. Now, of course, we could define that term a million ways from Sunday. And I want to start just high level and see where this conversation goes about marketing principles like of great brand. What makes a great brand and the marketing principles within, right? So let me just start there. Let's start kind of brainstorming and word association on marketing principles and great brands.
Okay, let's go. I mean, I have some thoughts. And when I was at Converse, we did a lot of work on like, how do we want to market? Like, how do we want to think about interacting with our consumers? And we wrote four super simple principles that like became the decision criteria for almost everything we did. One was celebrate your audience, not yourself. And like, you know, brands love to talk about themselves, but it's like, you should be celebrating your consumers and the people that love your brand or the people that buy your brand. Second, be useful. Like, try to find ways to do things with and for your consumers instead of to or at them. Third was own, don't rent. Like, you know, create your own marketing platforms. Like, you know, don't sponsor everything. Just create your own stuff. And then fourth was like this, like sort of a wild card around celebrating the differences between people, not the similarities. So many brands try to tell you we're all the same and we bring everybody together. And like the beautiful thing about the world we live in is that we're not all the same. And we should celebrate those differences because that's what makes life and the world so interesting. So literally, those were the four things that we thought about. And I kind of carry those with me everywhere I have been and everywhere I go. It's always about making sure if you're the CMO, you know, your job is to be the voice of the consumer. And that's, most CMOs don't approach it that way. They get up in the morning and think, I've got to sell 5% more to this person than I sold them last year. And that's not the case. You need to be their voice in the boardroom and speak up for them so they're represented.
I could not agree more. And I know, look, we all know there's different types of CMOs, right? There's brand, there's performance as two examples. But to me, regardless of what kind of quote CMO you are, you're always that voice. You need to be that voice.
For sure. No question. Yeah. I mean, who else is going to be that voice in the boardroom?
Exactly. And that's a responsibility that, unfortunately, as you were alluding to, some CMOs, and I'm not saying all, either choose not to or ignore that responsibility And they're more focused, like you said, on the bottom line.
Yeah. And the bottom line comes with focus and understanding of your consumer. Like we're in the business, all of us in brands, you're in the business to, you know, create products, experiences, and services that matter for people on some level. And so you got to know your consumer and not just get up and try to figure out how I'm going to trick you into buying 6% more. That's not what it's about. Like, you know, understand who they are and speak for them. I used to, you know, you may have heard me say this before, but we used to do the empty chair. I always do the empty chair in big meetings. I go just randomly. I don't say anything about it. There's an empty chair sitting at the table. At the end of the meeting, I'll say, hey, let's just for 1 second, just imagine one of our consumers was sitting in that chair during this entire 3.5 hour budget meeting. And they heard that we never even brought them up. They heard how little we talked about them. You think they'd ever buy anything from us again? They heard how we talk to each other. Like, let's use this right now. Would they buy from us? No, because we didn't show any care whatsoever for them in this meeting. So I try to always bring them with me.
Something tells me you also bring with you, and this is just mind-blowing to me that we're still dealing with this stuff in 2024. And what I'm getting at, Jeff, is I don't know how many survey after survey or study after study I have to see where it shows, well, this is what marketers think consumers want versus what consumers actually want. And I want to throw my head up going, I don't care what a marketer, like, it doesn't, we're not marketing to ourselves.
You nailed it. That's exactly right. It doesn't matter what we think. It matters what they think. And we as marketers spend a lot of time talking about what we think. And we're all a bunch of copycats. And, you know, you hear one new thing in Ad Age, there's a new buzzword. And suddenly there's a week-long seminar on it in New York City. And everybody's got to be there. And everybody's suddenly a thought leader on it. And you're like, man, what are we doing here? So I have a long-standing love-hate relationship with the marketing industry, because it's a machine, right? As a CMO, you don't realize you're in this machine. You talk to your media agency, what should I do? You should buy more media. You talk to your creative agency, what should I do? You should run more ads. Let's create some ads. You know, you got your social team, you should do more stuff on social. You should do this, you should do that. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, hang on a second. I'm in the middle of a machine and everybody's serving their own interests. So let me step back for a second and really think about what it is we're trying to do here. And I'm not putting down marketing or the marketing industry. I'm just saying that sometimes I think we need to like wake up a little bit and stop spending so much time following everybody else and start like thinking for ourselves.
And to add to that, listen to what your consumers are literally telling you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And there are brands and products that have been wildly successful. You know, Nike is a great example. They would say, kids can't tell us what is cool. We have to show them what's cool. So they understand what the cultural trends are, but they're creating products that are leading in design. And so I get that. I get that there's sometimes a confident approach from a brand can make a difference or can set, you know, a new mindset. But for the most part, if you're just talking to your consumers around them and watching with your eyes and not with your mouth, it's amazing what you can learn.
Right? Like, I'm chuckling because I'm such a believer just in keeping things simple anyway. And we humans overcomplicate things. And I swear marketers take it to a whole new level.
Oh, I know. We do. We do. We really do. I once gave a talk at Northwestern at a conference, and I opened with a page of 35 buzzwords that we use on a daily basis. And then I said, let's imagine we're home at dinner with our family. And our daughter said, what did you do today? Well, you know what? I got up and I targeted a group of multiculturals. I geofenced them. And then I did these 7 things. And my daughter goes, huh?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. And we hit our KPIs, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, we just sometimes have to just step back and just not forget, you know, why we got into this business to begin with. And it's the, you know, I jokingly say marketing is the science of understanding people and the art of knowing when to shut your mouth.
Did you coin that? I love that.
I did years ago. And that's what I think. It's like, you know, understand people, but then sometimes it's better to not speak. Not everybody wants your ad.
Silence is golden. And because you know what? Really at the core of what we're talking about is relationships.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it's with a spouse, whether it's a friend, a family member, or with it's a consumer, knowing when to not speak
right
in any relationship, right? Right.
And then every time we run into our consumers, if we ask them to buy, every single time we see them, they're going to think, you don't really care. You don't really understand. Mm-hmm. This is all about you. And, you know, it's super interesting that, you know, we go from, Nike taught me this, like you go from a world where they used to sell running shoes and they would say, you want to buy some running shoes? Hey, you should buy some running shoes. And then one day Nike said, hey, let's go running, right? Here's an app to help you with your running. Here's a running club at our local store. You don't even have to wear our stuff. We know you bought running shoes. Let's go running. And it's the things that you do between purchases that are really important in
yep.
terms of people really loving your brand or liking your brand. It's what you do between purchases. And like, you know, Nike was like, you can use our app and you don't have to run in our shoes. And then they're building brand preference by adding relevance mm-hmm. over time. And it's not mm-hmm. just stopping me on the corner every time you see me and asking me to buy something. You hate that friend that's always asking you for something.
Oh my God.
Right?
You touched the nerve. So about, I don't know, 10 years ago, I wrote this fictional story of a guy who was like walking on the beach and he found this note washed up in a bottle. And it was, you ready for this? I called it the NAS doctrine. NAS stood for not always selling. Right. And I had like, it could be on parchment paper, right? And like it was written in the 1600s and it was like a decree. Thou shalt not sell.
Exactly.
Every communicate, right?
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it was meant to be tongue in cheek, but not at the same time. Like, where is it? It's not written anywhere. Of course it's not. So why are you doing it?
Right. Exactly. I mean, think about, you know, some people say, oh, brands are humans. And like, brands are not humans. Like brands, they're businesses. But if you don't enter and approach the marketplace in a way that is considering the human that's going to receive your messages, you're going to fail. Like if I walked into a dinner party, if you were having a dinner party and I walked in a few minutes late, everybody was there, everybody was talking, lots of chatter going on in the room. People are having a drink, lots of laughter. And I walk in a little bit late. I stand on a chair and I hit a ding, ding, ding. I hit a glass and I'm like, hey, I just want everybody to know I'm here. And I got something to say, right? You're going to be like, what? Who the hell is that? No. I got something to say. Everybody stop talking. Well, that's what we do every day as brands. We just interrupt your life. And we think that we're so important that you're going to stop and listen. And what's going to happen in that dinner party is you're going to get asked to leave, or at best, not asked to ever come back.
Exactly.
So,
and as a brand, that's the death.
That's right.
You're done.
So act like a good dinner guest. And, you know, you walk up into the company, you understand what people are thinking and what they're talking about, and then find ways to like add in to the conversation versus just disrupting it.
Could not agree more. Hey, I want to get into, you know, you were at some other Converse, Coca-Cola,
yeah,
among others, but I'm dying to know, and I know my audience would be, what have you learned at those places, right, that you're applying now at Topgolf, whether it's a do or don't, like you may, I'm not saying it's all like,
yeah,
other things. Oh no, I did this at Coke. I'm not doing it here.
No. So I've learned, fortunately, I've worked for some amazing people, and some of the people I've worked for have taught me how to be, and some people that I've worked for have taught me how not to be. But I've learned something every place I've gone. P&G, I learned the basics, the fundamentals of structure and how you think about a marketplace and how you think about a consumer proposition. Coke, I learned the value of a brand and storytelling and the value of like the bigness of what a brand can be. At Starbucks, I learned the value of experience, like that it's all about the experience, that the 5 minutes you're in a Starbucks store every day is the brand. That's the campaign. Like that has to be, you know, you've got three, four, 5 minutes of time with a consumer and they're going to walk out and feel good or bad. So make them feel good. And then at Converse, it was about letting go, just letting go and not being in control. We try so hard to hold on so tight to our brands. And sometimes you just got to let the brand go, let it breathe and see where people will take it. I mean, like the Topgolf brand is loved by so many people because we have 30,000 playmakers that work in our venues that make sure people are having fun every day and that we get out of their way when they're taking pictures of their friends having fun. Hey, it's about Topgolf. It's not about Topgolf. It's about you having fun and us providing you with a place and an opportunity to do that. And in a game of golf that's like got massive barriers to entry and is super intimidating, we're like, dude, it's totally fun. Just come and play. And,
yeah.
You know, we got this belief that, you know, that we believe in the unlimited power of play. And that's our role, is to remind you that this world is super stressful and you got a lot of stuff you got to get through. And we just like want to offer a place where you can just come and play and laugh and forget about all that stuff.
It sounds like, I don't want to say the most you took or the most apples to apples would be your time at Starbucks in the context of a retail location.
Yeah, for sure. And I did learn that. I had never had that sort of experience, but I did. And I had the opportunity to work closely with Howard Schultz for 3 years and to be able to walk into a Starbucks store with him and to see how he sees a Starbucks store through his eyes was really, really interesting. And it taught me a lot. And the idea that the experience is the message is something I remember when I asked him one day when I first started, this was years ago before they had the app and before they, you know, they didn't do any advertising. And I said, hey, why don't we advertise? And he just looked at me and goes, what'd you say? And I go, why? And I, you know, because I'm from the South, I just thought, oh, he didn't hear me. Let me slow down and say it again. Why don't we advertise? And he goes, I want you to look around. And I'm like, okay. And I didn't know what to look at. I was new in retail. No, I really want you to look around. And I'm like, okay. He said, see the woman who's third in line? I said, yeah. He said, you see what happened when she walked through the door? I said, no. He goes, that's because you weren't looking. Now I want you to watch what's about to happen. I'm like, okay. So we stood there for a couple minutes. The person that was the third person in line got to the counter and the barista handed her a coffee. Already had her name on the cup, handed her a coffee and said, see that? This woman comes in the store every day and the barista knows her. And that interaction that just happened, that's our campaign. We don't need to advertise if this works. And then he said, you know why McDonald's advertises? And I'm like, no. And he goes, because their experience is nowhere near ours. And they've got to build an image. And it was a really interesting observation from him at that time. And I was forever changed in the sense that the experience is so much more powerful than any message or line you could come up with or any campaign. I mean, I took that to Converse and we, you know, with what we did with recording studios and all the stuff we did with young street artists and young visual artists and young musicians was all about providing them with a really great brand experience, not a branded experience, but a really great experience from the brand, showing them that we supported them.
Yeah.
So
big difference.
Yeah. And like our experience at Topgolf is like, it's funny. We created our first campaign a little over a year ago. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, brands create an image and then the experience doesn't live up to the image. We had a great experience that we had to get our advertising to like step up to be as good as our in-venue experience has been. So, I mean, we've got some remarkable people who work in our venues every single day and like they're the brand.
What do you want people, Jeff, to think of when they think of the Topgolf brand?
I want them to think about it's a place to play and to like no pressure. Golf is a super pressure filled high barrier of entry sport. It's intimidating. I was telling somebody the other day when my first golf lesson I took in Tampa, Florida, my dad put me in lessons, you know, I was like middle, junior high. And I was a soccer player. I showed up at the course for my first lesson in a pair of soccer shorts. And the golf pro said, you can't wear those. And I'm like, why not? And he goes, you can't wear those shorts. And I'm like, well, you have shorts on. And he goes, yeah, but mine have pockets. I'm like, well, I don't need pockets. And he said, you can't wear soccer shorts to play golf. So next time, wear a different pair of shorts. And that was my first impression of golf. And I was like, you're a snob. Like, this is a super, I'm not welcome here. So I've always carried that with me. And I haven't like for years wasn't in love with golf because of that moment. And I took my lessons and I learned how to play and all that. But I always had this like, So for us, it's like, we want to be the opposite of that. You can wear whatever the heck you want. We like just wear clothes. That's all we ask. And like, just come and have fun. And yeah. like, we're not going to criticize your pants or your shorts or your shirt. Like mm-hmm. come as you are and play what you want and have a good time. And, you know, we're kind of trying to, we're trying to make the game of golf more accessible. And then if we focus on making the game more accessible and make everyone feel like they can see themselves there and they can feel welcome, accessibility leads to diversity. Like, we'll bring new people in, new and different people into the game. And then diversity leads to more fun for more people. And that's literally it. Like, that's the formula. Accessibility leads to diversity. Diversity leads to more fun for more people. Simple as that.
Yeah, right. There's that S word again. Simple, right? I think you've kind of already answered this, but like, what's Topgolf's purpose?
Well, I mean, purpose is such a word, man. Like, it's one of those buzzwords that like suddenly every brand has needed to have a purpose. And mm-hmm. for us, it's like it starts with a belief, and the belief is in the unlimited power of play. And then the purpose is to like bring more joy to the world through more ways to play the game of golf. Like, it's that simple, but it starts with a belief. And so many brands, I think, write a purpose statement that isn't grounded in a belief, and it rings a bit hollow when it gets to the world, because, you know, a lot of brands have a purpose because, you know, Ad Age told you needed one.
Exactly. I was just going to say that they're checking the box, as I call it.
Right. And for us, it's not like we spent a lot of time distilling down the belief that anybody who walked into Topgolf, if you can't believe in this, the unlimited power play, because we live in a world, a super stressed out world, coming out of COVID, going into elections, like there's a ton of stress in the world. And we just want to be like, not that. We want to be a respite from that. And, you know, the older we get, the more the world discourages play. You're looked at as you're immature, versus having a playful mindset or a playful attitude and not being afraid to like, you know, step outside the box a little bit and have a little fun. So we're just trying to remind people that, like, you know, lighten up.
Yeah. How would you define the average customer look like?
I mean, they're not golfers for the most part. Most people who come to Topgolf mm-hmm. never played golf before, all walks of life. A lot of people get introduced to Topgolf through a corporate event, like their boss books a time and they have a party at Topgolf. And most people walk in the door thinking, I don't like golf. I don't play golf. I don't really want to be here. And then they leave like, wow, that was super fun. I didn't know that could be so fun. Wow, I just played golf. That's amazing. Maybe I'll come back with my family. So it's a broad range of people. We're going to have about 35 million people come through our doors this year, which is a pretty big number. We've got almost 100 venues. We'll hit our 100th venue in the next year. So everybody's welcome.
Is there which normally flies in the face of conventional marketing, right? Like, you can't market to everybody. Well, right. Who says you can't, right?
Right.
Because I can see people rolling their eyes listening to what you just said. Like, no, you can.
Yeah.
Who says you can't?
Well, yeah. I mean, we have six distinct player segments from all walks of life. We know where they live their lives. We know what apps are on their phone screens, if you will, in general. We know where they spend their time. So we communicate to them in the right ways, in the right places. But we're open for business for everyone. Like, play should be something everyone should be able to experience. So yeah, I don't say we market to everybody, and you know, yeah, you can't be everything to everybody, but what you can be is something that everybody can connect with. And that's a different thing than trying to market to everybody or having an idea or an experience that anyone can connect to.
Do you get the sense, and I'll compare and contrast to your other like Coke and Converse and Starbucks versus a golf, which seems to be more like you're either in or you're out, right? To most people, like, yeah, I want to buy shoes, I may not buy Converse, or I want to buy coffee, I may not buy Starbucks, but I'm going to get coffee. I don't have to golf.
Right.
Right. Do you get that sense since you've been at the brand, that perception of, I'm not, well, why would I ever go to Topgolf? I never golfed in my life.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of that. Like I said, there's a lot of people that are turned off by what golf has been for the last 100 years. And let me say this, golf is a great game and a great sport. And it has been more or less governed by a certain type of person for many, many years. That is changing. We're part of that change. I think the NGF reported that 10% of people who play golf in the U.S. first played at Topgolf. And that number is going to get bigger over time. So yeah, there are a lot of people that just simply say, I do not play golf. And then that's why we say it's golf. It's not golf. It's Topgolf, because there's as much not golf as there is golf. And the not golf part of Topgolf is equally as important as the golf part. So like I said, we want you to come and have fun. You may never play on a green grass course in your life, and that is totally fine. We just want you to have fun, and fun enough to want to come back sometime.
Yeah. So it's safe to assume there's an awareness play that has to happen here.
For sure. For sure. We have relatively low, it's funny, we have relatively low awareness as a brand. Once you know us, you totally know us. We have relatively low awareness in the markets where we already have buildings. So there's a massive opportunity in the markets that we already exist to bring new and more people in. And then there's a group of people that are aware of the brand, but not aware of what goes on inside the building.
Exactly.
They see the three-story driving range and think that's a three-story driving range. So exposing people to the different kinds of things you can do and the different kinds of fun that you can have inside of a Topgolf is part of our communication objectives and challenge as well. It's to show we want everybody to be able to see themselves in the experience itself. So we've been doing a lot of work on like really highlighting, you know, the play at Topgolf and what that looks like and what it feels like.
Yep, exactly. I want to pivot to a topic that comes up quite a bit when I'm talking to CMOs, and that's partnerships. Mm-hmm. And given your wide experiences of different brands, I want to come at this two-part. One is, how do you look at partnerships from an agnostic perspective in terms of whatever role you're in, whatever given company, and what others can learn from that? What advice would you give to chief brand, chief marketing officer when it comes to partnerships? And then let's get into some specific ones that Topgolf has.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I first got to Topgolf, I mean, I come from Coke, and leading the strategic marketing, you know, efforts included sports, included a lot of sponsorships and partnerships. I got to Topgolf, and like my first observation was, boy, we have a lot of partners. We have a lot of, we're selling like everything to outside people. Where is our voice? So we've been cleaning up the amount of outside brands and voices we're having in the experience, and really trimming that back and looking at fewer, bigger, more meaningful partnerships. So we just, in the past year, we signed a deal with Honda, and we're doing some really interesting, fun stuff with them. We've got two really, really big brand deals that we're going to announce in the next, call it 2 or 3 months. And we're looking for brands that can help us change golf, like that see the changes that are happening in golf and want to go along with us. And then, you know, that you know, we have so many people coming through our doors. We offer a tremendous media opportunity, if you will, or activation opportunity inside the four walls. So,
right.
So yeah, partnerships I think are super important. And like I said, we're in the business of, we're going to have 3 or 4 decent big partners, and that's it.
So what advice would you give to a CMO or chief brand, agnostic of an industry, when it comes to, you know, establishing and developing brand partnerships?
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to choose wisely. You got to make sure that there's the right overlap is there, that it's a natural overlap. And then, you know, you both bring your strengths to the table, and both brands should benefit. It shouldn't just be a one-way financial transaction. That's why, like in the marketing principles, own, don't rent, right? Like what that means is, don't sponsor everything. Like, create some of your own things, because if you sponsor something, you're just going to get the sign in the left field fence, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, cool. But that's not really a partnership. It's just a one-way sponsorship. So find brands that like are going to complement what you do, and find they're going to complement the lives of your consumers.
Mutually beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard to do, but when you get it, you get it. Like, it's great.
So I'm looking at, you know, how much time we have left. I have, in all the interviews I've done for my show, Jeff, I've never taken this long to bring up the following topic. And it is the elephant in every marketer's room. Mm-hmm. You may know where I'm going. It's two letters. It's AI.
Yeah. Yeah. AI.
Yeah. Perhaps you've heard of it.
I think it's fascinating what could be. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet what will be, but I do know that, you know, we're keeping an eye on it. We're starting to think about how we're using it. I'm not mm-hmm. making the leap to let it create my creative yet. You know, and I think that's for me anyway, personally, it's a little ways off, but taking loads and loads of data and being able to distill it down and be a little bit more predictive, I think is really interesting to me. Most brands spend a lot of time looking at what happened yesterday. Like, look at our results from yesterday. You're mm-hmm. like, okay, great. We're looking, okay, it's today and we're looking at yesterday, which means we're not looking at tomorrow. So yep. is February 28th last year the same as February 28th this year? No, they're different days. They're the same date, but they're very different days.
Yep.
So like, hard to compare that day to this day. So using data to be more predictive and to help us find new ways to connect. I mean, some of the stuff Google Ads is doing with helping brands, you know, you give them the creative assets and depending on the audience, we'll take your creative assets and combine them in a way that's unique to that particular consumer. Super interesting stuff. So I'm fascinated. I'm reading as much as I can. I know somebody that just went to OpenAI and I've volunteered to be like a guinea pig for him, not in terms of us maybe doing things, but just learning because there's so much to learn. So, you know, I resisted it a little bit at first, just not resisted it, but like said, let's just watch what happens for a minute. Let's not try to be the first marketer that does the AI. Like, let's let someone else do that and let's learn. And then when we decide we find the right way to use something, then we'll step into it and use it the way we want to do it. It's like when I first got to Topgolf, the NFT craze.
Yep.
Oh my God, everybody was doing an NFT. Man, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? You know, and I was like, we're not going to do anything. We got to do an NFT. And I'm like, no, why? Like, why? And I know all the metaverse people are going to be screaming when they hear this. And like, I don't really care. Because like, I'm focused on the real person that's right in front of me. So until I master that, like, I'm not going to go like creating some NFT thing.
Yeah. It's the shiny new toy, right? Oh. Exactly. Now I don't think AI is anywhere near that.
Oh my God, not at all. No, AI is and will be for a very long time. The number one thing we as marketers will have to deal with and face and figure out how to use.
Exactly. And in, I don't want to say most brands, but going back to your Coke days, you could look at, well, what is Pepsi doing with AI, right? What is your competitor doing?
Yeah.
With AI? Because you look at that. No, but it brings me to an interesting question though. Who's Topgolf's competitor?
Our competitor is twofold, I think. One, it's ourselves. Like, we need to be competing with ourselves to make sure we're being as good as we can be every single day. And then it's time. Hmm. It's leisure time. How much time do you have and how do you spend your time that you have? And what are the choices you have in terms of spending your time? So really it's about, that's really the gist of it. And it depends on like what marketplace we're in, for example.
Right.
Chattanooga, Tennessee is very different than Atlanta, Georgia. I live in Atlanta. I've got lots of choices on any given day. It could be the Braves or the Falcons or the Hawks or like a million different
concert, things. A movie, a concert, right? Yeah.
In Chattanooga, it's like it might just be the Chattanooga Lookouts. So there's or AMC theaters. So there's potentially fewer choices. It's not better or worse. It's just different.
Yeah.
So we have to think about where we are in the marketplace and then where we are in the context of people's lives.
Right. Right. But you're always still monitoring whoever that competition is, what they're doing.
For sure. Yeah. It's other experiences.
Right.
Right. And you know, I think, you know, our job is to make sure we're on the front foot and that our technology and our game platforms are constantly innovating and improving, and that we don't, that tech doesn't zip past us because we think we've got the answer. So we're constantly looking at bringing new games to the market, figuring out new ways to use things like augmented reality in our experience, and all that kind of stuff.
We're almost wrapping up, and it's time for me to put you on the spot, which is I love to do with my guest. Who's had the biggest impact on your career?
I'm going to give you three people.
All right, and I'll allow that. Okay.
And I will tell you that it's more like 333 people. But one, first and foremost, my wife. Mm-hmm. She told me years ago that I had a creative muscle I wasn't using, and kind of opened up that side of my brain. Second, a guy named Steve Koonin, who I worked for at Coke, who's now the CEO of the Atlanta Hawks. He taught me to like bring my creative ideas to life and encouraged me to do that. So my wife told me I could be creative and showed me. Steve then encouraged me and allowed me and really taught me how to think differently. And then I have to say also Howard Schultz had a big impact on me because he's such a passionate visionary and he so deeply cares about people. I will tell you, when I left Starbucks, I wouldn't have said that because I was young and dumb. But man, when I look back and think about what I learned from Howard, I'm so incredibly grateful. And then I'm sorry, I'm going to slip one more in on you. A guy named Mark Parker that was the CEO of Nike when I was a Convert. That guy is remarkable. He's the chairman of the board of Nike now and also of Disney. And you get in a room with that guy and it is special.
Interesting.
I loved working with that guy.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Putting you on the spot, part two. And you're a big music fan like I am. Mm-hmm. And as you can see behind me, I have my album wall.
I know. I love that.
As many as you can make out. But music's played a big part. It always will.
Yeah.
And there are certain songs and lyrics that resonate with me more than others. Number one for me is a song called Lean On Me.
Yeah, right.
By Bill Withers from the 70s.
So good.
Right. Is there a song lyric, a song title, a music group, a concert, something music related, Jeff, that when you hear it, when you think of it, it just means a little more?
Yes. And you know, I have a rich history and love for music as well. I will say 13, 14 years old, I sold Cokes at Tampa Stadium. It was a way to make a little bit of money and the only way my parents would let me go see a rock concert. And I saw Pink Floyd. And I was, like I said, 13 or 14, 76 or 77. It would have been, I'm showing my age. But selling Cokes as a 13-year-old kid and then ditching the tray and putting $100 in my pocket and climbing up in the stands and watching Pink Floyd and seeing a great big giant pig flying above Tampa Stadium was a moment that is forever in my mind and will always be special. And I've had hundreds of special moments with music, but that one was one that just sticks out for me.
I'm curious now, is it whenever you hear a Pink Floyd song, does it take you right back?
Yeah, I do. When I hear Pink Floyd, I think, wow, yeah, like, wow, I was just a dumb kid. I didn't even know. I didn't even really know what was going on. I was just like, what is happening?
When that song Lean On Me came out, I was like 8.
Yeah.
I don't know what the lyrics meant. Now as an adult, you're like, yeah, they resonate.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that and a line from a Grateful Dead song from Sugar Magnolia, a throwaway line at the end where he starts to sing Sunshine Daydream. Those two words, like if I ever buy another boat someday, it's going to be called Sunshine Daydream because I think those are the two loveliest words in the world. It's like Sunshine Daydream, wherever I hear that, that is where I want to be.
You can't help feel in a good mood when you hear those two words.
That's exactly. And it's just like it sneaks into the end of the song. And every time I hear it, I'm like, here it comes. Yeah. And it just always makes me feel really good.
Even though you've heard it a million times. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
I love
it. Never will I get tired of hearing that line.
I love it. Well, listen, yeah. I want to thank you. It's been so great catching up.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
You are definitely, you know, one of the people I respect in the world of marketing. Yeah. And it's just been a treat. So again, thank you for coming on the show.
Listen, the honor's mine. I'm grateful for opportunities like this, and I thank you.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the CMO Whisperer Show. I hope you shared this episode with your friends, and if you have not already, please subscribe to be kept up to date on all the latest episodes. And if you're so inclined, leave me a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you.